As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
With the preseason in full swing, you don't want to miss a single episode of the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network every single Monday with myself, Zach Harper, and our cast of characters, Trevon Edwards, Jay King, Dave DeFore, James Edward III, Law Murray. We're breaking down every single big
preseason
story, and we're doing it with a lot of fun and a lot of trash talk. Make sure you're checking it out. The Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show every single Monday morning, right in your podcast face.
With a group that works like they do, the group that embraces some of our mantras. We talk about getting better every day. We talk about playing together. When you do those things, you end up on a stage like this. They compete. They're NBA champions. I couldn't be more happy for our players, for our team, for our organization, for our city of Milwaukee, NBA champions. Yeah. It's big time.
This is Nerder, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Wait! You can't make this up, man.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. I think this is going to come out on Friday, which would mean it's Nerder, She Wrote. I'm Dave DeFore. That also usually means it's Nerder, She Wrote. My man Mo DeKeel is here. What's up, Mo? Been a few weeks. How are you?
What's up, Dave? Doing well. I have adopted a dog. I've become a foster fam.
Yeah, well, this was the dog that that we talked about a few weeks ago on the show. And happily,
he's going to... He's the fourth member of the pod. Everybody
hang
deal with
second.
It. I'm going to bring
hold
him up every
second.
Now and then.
Now, hang on.
What?
I mean, I've got dogs that have been here
yeah, but
this
you don't
whole
talk about
time. Them. I do talk about it. Well, maybe not as much as you're now talking about your new one. Anyway, joining us this week, not Seth Partnow, Derek Bodner, beat reporter for The Athletic, covering the Philadelphia 76ers. Derek, things are kind of boring right now for you, huh?
Nothing going on at all. It's a perfectly normal training camp, but I am happy that you guys have brought me on.
You know, we've been trying to do this internally. We've been talking about having Derek on for what? I don't know, 6 weeks, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, for a while. But the most important thing here, and this is for the listeners, is he is replacing Seth today. And the reason why is he has a cat. So I am hoping, like I do when Seth is on the pod, is the cat will somehow jump Derek the way I root for it to do it.
We've been on the Zoom call for about 20 minutes, and this cat has just shown love and affection to Derek in a way that we're not used to seeing from our...
So disappointing. So disappointing.
If there's any crossover listeners with Sixers beat, which I do with Rich Hoffman, they are well aware of the cat. She will come walking by at random times, bump into the microphone, probably hit my keyboard, maybe even shut off Zoom. It'll happen. But she is an affectionate cat. She is just a very annoying cat. But yes.
Yeah. Well, okay. Listen, this is an animal friendly podcast. It has been referred to as the dog pod previously. And, you know, go out and get your pet spayed and neuter, all that good stuff. Derek, look, let's just jump right into this because I don't know. I didn't expect us to still be talking about this. Can you catch us up a little bit on where we are, which feels a little bit like nowhere?
Yeah, we're nowhere, but we have everybody yelling at each other. And, you know, I think so, you know, you going back, like you sort of asked, like, did you expect it to be still going on? Or at least you didn't expect it to still be going on. I think once it got past free agency, I certainly thought, well, Darryl's not going to trade him at this time of the season. I thought there was a very strong possibility Darryl was going to try to extend this into at least December when half the league can be traded again, maybe closer to a trade deadline. The question is whether or not Ben Simmons and his camp could make it uncomfortable enough where Darryl would come off of that plan. So I always sort of expected this kind of back and forth to happen through the media. And now from the Sixers' perspective and Joel Embiid specifically today, publicly with his name attached to it, you know, every now and then I go, wow, this is really getting ugly. It's turning into a circus. But truth be told, you sort of expect it to be a circus because that is the only leverage Ben Simmons have. He has 4 years on his contract. He can't threaten to walk. This is the only thing he can do, but it's turning into a circus.
And so you, I guess when he didn't get moved on draft night, right? You start sort of thinking, okay, well, it's got to happen in the next couple of days right before free agency. And it wasn't very long. Like the turnaround was not long. How surprised were you that they didn't move him then? Like, I mean, it just felt like it was going to happen. All the signs have been pointing there. And after that, of course, it makes sense. All right, well, we're at least going to training camp. And you could even envision a scenario where it's like, okay, well, they worked this out ahead of training camp and you're thinking about the trade deadline. But to me, that was that window that they just missed. And I was shocked that they missed it. I thought that was the time to strike for them.
Yeah. No, I thought if you had asked me coming into the draft whether or not he would have been traded, I would have thought it was certainly higher than 50-50. I thought there was a good chance. We don't truly know what offers were out there. You know, the only real information we have are the leaks that have come out of what Daryl Morey was asking for. We don't really know what his, you know, that's just what's being leaked out there. There's probably a middle ground that he might have been willing to accept. We don't know how close any team was to that middle ground. But, you know, I think this is just, it is, we've never really seen a player collapse as epically as Ben Simmons did against the Hawks and then request a trade. So we don't know, like, NBA decision makers are like you and I. There's some recency bias baked into that. We don't know how deflated his trade value was so soon after what really was a collapse of monumental proportions. So I think this has always been sort of like a tough situation to gauge. And I think because of that, I think the trade market probably just wasn't what you or I were expecting, even knowing that he had just done what he did against the Hawks. I think it was probably lower than we expected. And because of that, Daryl was like, all right, look, I just got to get to the point where we can move on from that. Teams can remember that he is still a good basketball player, that he is still only 25 years old. Maybe you can bring him back. And it certainly looks like now that's going to be a lot tougher. But I think back in July, you thought maybe we can bring him back and get him back on board. But it's gone certainly not the way the Sixers, like if the Sixers were hoping to recoup value, nothing that has happened here in the last month has worked in their favor. But I think they still believe if they can get to December when the trade market is warmer and there's more teams that can engage, and they're probably right, but boy, is that going to be a tough 8 weeks to get through. Like, this is going to be not super fun. Not super fun.
It may not be tough if he doesn't come.
That's true.
We still doubt a player, though.
Yeah. But if...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
If they find a way to kind of win games, right? Like, that's really what it's going to come down to. If they're able to win games without Simmons, which... not an easy ask, right? He's an important piece, especially defensively. But if they're able to, that makes it easier to kind of hold out. Now, and here's my thing, too, because I think you guys are right in terms of the trade offers. Like, I'm not expecting a trade before the season because, honestly, I couldn't imagine the offers have gotten better from where they were in the summer to where they are now. So if he didn't make the trades in the summer, I don't think you're making them now in the fall. I think ultimately, too, it's going to take teams playing games and going like, oh, crap, we suck.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's going to take 10 to 15 games where they're like, we're not at all as good as we thought we were going to be, or so-and-so's not panning out, or this. Like, there is some of that, too. Like, they're, for sure, every team's going to try to get a deal right now. And it's no different than me trying to find the best deal at the market and then just waiting a few days and then getting whatever, if it price drops, whatever. Probably a poor analogy. I couldn't think of anything bargaining wise. But along those lines, they will get, I think the offers will progressively get better just on that. Cause I think you're right, Derek, in that teams are eventually going to remember who Ben Simmons is as a player.
And to your point, they're going to remember who they are.
Right. Yeah. And that makes a big difference in the offers. And of course, the December 15th deadline of when guys who signed this year, this offseason, can be eligible to be traded makes it a little more interesting.
Yeah. No, I think to your point, there's a pervasive optimism at this time of year. I think that certainly impacts it. And also, it's just everyone looks at the Sixers and say, well, this is a bad situation that's getting worse. We already know you're on that downward slope of how uncomfortable this is for Sixers. Why would I give up a deal that's even remotely risky for myself right now when it's just going to get worse and worse and worse? Buy on the dip. We're not at the bottom of the dip yet. So yeah, I think if Daryl Morey can just find a way to get through this portion, and I agree to your point. I think the biggest damage Ben Simmons can do, or at least the most leverage he can apply and how uncomfortable he can make it for the Sixers, the most he can do that by is coming to camp and going full Jimmy Butler. The first few days of camp and media day is when it is most top of mind. It's when we in the media are going to ask most questions. It's when Joel Embiid is most likely to slip up in his answer. It's when Doc Rivers is going to get annoyed by it. But you project this out 3 weeks and it's a story that's just been out there for a while and Ben's not here. Well, then I don't think it's going to be super uncomfortable for the Sixers. So I think this is sort of like an all-out blitz by both the Simmons camp and also some self-inflicted wounds by the Sixers and how they answer the questions. But you get through this tough period, and I think it becomes a little more tenable for the Sixers.
How did we even get here in the first place? Because it's not just one playoff collapse, right? Like, I mean, he's been there for years. Is it just a case of too much chatter in the media talking about his issues on the court and lack of fit? I mean, clearly there's stuff that has been brewing for a while, but you hear some of the stuff coming out of the Simmons camp. And it sounds like none of this is new. Now, a few years ago, I predicted Simmons might be the first player to potentially sign a qualifying offer and try to get into free agency. Now, this was when we thought he might be a better player than he is, which he's still a really good player, but he's not, a LeBron level talent. This actually feels like a better move for him. If you want to be crass about it, he signed the deal. The deal is signed, and now he's trying to get moved.
Well, and if you go back to it, it's better for the Sixers fans too than if you would have walked, because you're going to get something back in a trade. You just have to go through this annoying period. Look, I think how we got here is probably something that only one person truly knows. And I think probably the Sixers don't even truly know. Sam Amick certainly had a lot of detail. Wrote a piece, I think, on Tuesday over at The Athletic, some small publication, but it was a good piece. So go check that out. But he had a lot of detail in there about there's always sort of been like a belief with Simmons that he was always going to be the number two option here in Philly. As long as Joel Embiid was there, there's nothing personal, but he thinks a team can be constructed around him that would make use of his talents better rather than a sort of like a post up big man. So there's that. And then there's, I think certainly the trade requests the trade rumors that happened, the Simmons for Harden, not rumors because they were true. The trade discussions that were happening with the Sixers and the Rockets last December and January, I think certainly contributed to that. I think Embiid and Simmons comments certainly contributed to that. I think the way that the city sort of got on Simmons after that collapse against the Hawks contributed to it. And sort of like, I guess the way, I think there was probably always this belief in Simmons' mind that I could be more if a team was perfectly constructed around me. But you can keep that at bay when you're winning and when you're optimistic about winning. But now that there's been three playoff runs where Embiid and Simmons were both healthy for the playoff runs. All three have ended in second round exits. When you sort of have that belief in the back of your mind that you can be better, and also you haven't had the team success to offset that, and also you have a team that had just tried to trade you, and also you have some comments from the star player and a coach that didn't necessarily have your back and pinned a lot of the blame on you, or at least from his perspective did, I think all of that sort of adds up, and that nagging feeling you had behind you, you're not able to keep down anymore because of everything else that's going on. So I think it's a bunch of things.
You know, you mentioned there that Simmons maybe feels like he's never going to be more than the number two or whatever. Well, Joel Embiid today, the day that we're recording this, Thursday, I mean, he had some statements that kind of just said the exact opposite. And I'm going to paraphrase. Jade may drop in the actual quote here, because I actually think it's worth listening to the entire clip. It's like 2.5 minutes long, but I'll paraphrase here. The situation is weird, disappointing, borderline kind of disrespectful to all the guys that are out here fighting for their lives. Some guys rely on the team to be successful, to stay in the league and make money somehow. I feel like our teams have always been built around his needs. This is Embiid talking about Simmons. So it was kind of surprising to see. I mean, the reason we signed Al Horford is Simmons. We got rid of Jimmy because he needed the ball in his hands. Now, clearly, Joel Embiid disagrees with Ben Simmons and his view of how things are. Yeah. I don't think Embiid is saying anything here that isn't true. This stuff is true.
Certainly.
I have a couple of retorts here.
Please, let's go.
In this. First off, he's right about the Jimmy thing.
Right.
I think there's no arguing that, right? Like, Ben Simmons and Jimmy weren't really kind of seeing eye to eye. I don't think there's that. And that is also, because of that, that's also why I wouldn't be concerned of Simmons coming to camp and pulling a Jimmy Butler, because he's never shown that fight at all in his career.
Personality at all. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, so that's 100% right. Joel's 100% right on that. You build this team, it's the way you build around him, it's the same stuff you build around Embiid. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like Embiid talking about shooters and Embiid talking about the need for a shooting big. You do that, even if you didn't have Ben Simmons, you would do that because Joel Embiid's a heavy post guy, you know, and even him stretching out to threes. He's been doing that since he came into the league, was averaging minimum three-point attempts a game ever since he's been in the league. You know, I think it's something that, like, he's wanted to add to his game, something that a lot of modern big men have added to their game and things. So, like, when he, like, I think they built a team that works around the both of them, because what you would need around Simmons is the same stuff you need around Joel Embiid, which is shooting to create space in all of that. I think, you know, I kind of understand where Simmons is coming from in the sense of, like, yo, this is Embiid's team through and through, right? Like, when you look at the usage rate, Embiid's number one, Harris is number two, Simmons is three. Just, you know, if you look at somebody who's averaged over 30 minutes, if you just go straight down, Shake Milton has a higher usage rate than Ben Simmons last season. I think all of those things are kind of stuff that comes to fruition here in making Simmons feel that way. Because I honestly think I do want to see Simmons as the number one guy. I want to see him in an environment where you just sit similar to the way Milwaukee is set up. And I may be plugging my own piece here on Bleacher Report, but yeah, I think there's an area there where I think that's what Simmons is talking about. It's not so much built around him as much as give me the ball and let me have it for a lot more than I have to go and feed it to Embiid in the post.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, I agree on some respects. Like, certainly if you're going to design a team to fit Ben Simmons' strengths, a post-up heavy big man is not where you would start. You know, I think a lot of people look at it, well, all right, well, Embiid shot 38% from three. Yeah, how many possessions is he, you know, spending parked down in the paint? And that's never, like, Ben Simmons is never going to be good playing off of a post-up big man. That's not, there's really nothing you can do outside of put him in the dunker spot. Part of the problem, you can't do anything with him when Embiid's posting up, is because he never learned how to shoot. But right, the truth is, like, yes, would he be better offensively individually on Minnesota? Sure, of course. It's a more natural fit. But I think he would be marginally better individually offensively. I'm couching that with a lot because I don't think he's going to be, like, transformatively better. He's not going to become Giannis. He doesn't have that kind of scoring mindset or skill set. And also, the team's not going to be better because that defensive pairing is never going to be as good. You're never going to find a big man who can protect the rim like Joel and also space out the three-point line like Joel can. There just aren't many of them out there. So I think that individual Simmons success, which I think is only going to be marginal. Like, I think if you go back and you look at Al Horford, when he was playing with Al Horford without Embiid 2 years ago now, he was scoring about the same points per possession. I think it was like maybe 5% higher true shooting. So he was more efficient. He had a little more assists. He was better for sure, but he wasn't like entering a new stratosphere. And I think ultimately the bottom line isn't what is between the paint or clogging the paint. It's what's between his ears. Like, there's still going to become a point. If he's a number one option, he's going to get fouled. He has to be willing to accept that free throw line confidently. And if he's not, then he's not going to attack the rim confidently. He's going to be right in the same spot. So like, ultimately, yes, theoretically, if you the way I phrased it on a pod the other day is, if you remove all context around a situation, I think you could deconstruct the team better around him offensively. But the core underlying issues, I think, are still going to be there. But I also understand why Ben wouldn't necessarily have the perspective to look at that the way that I do, because it's you're not usually your own self-critic. But yeah, I think it's complicated.
How much of the issue that everyone has with Ben Simmons is about our own, I don't know, preconceived notions about his position? The guy's not a point guard. He doesn't have the touch. He doesn't have the shooting. Like, he's not an NBA point guard in the sense that we think of a guy who's a drink stirrer, because you're just not worried about him ever scoring the basketball. When he does, it's not in the half court. It's not a guy that you can really build a functional. Can you build a half court offense around him? I don't know. I mean, I just don't know that he's got the touch to be able to do it. Mo, I know you've got
a great article.
I know Bleacher Report. You've laid it all out for us. But Mo, look, man, say what you will about Giannis and the stuff that he does, but he is a lot more dangerous in the half court. The touch is 100%. There, the willingness to take shots. And I mean, and let's not deny the fact that him shooting those mid-rangers that he wound up shooting here and there actually mattered. Being willing to take contact, get to the basket and shoot the free throws, even when you're not making them. That's the difference.
The free throws thing is 100%. And Ben has to just get better on that. Doesn't matter wherever he goes, and that was actually a complaint I've had about Lonzo Ball in the past, right? Like, all of these guys, they have to get better as a free throw shooters because it affects their aggression. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to push back about Ben in the half court. And it's, I get in a little bit of trouble because I'm looking at the Utah game where he drops 42, yep. Right? And he was a monster in that game. And he was doing it many different ways. And it all starts with the ball in his hands. It starts with him going, okay, dribble handoff? No, I'm just going to break it and go right down the rim and attack. Oh, early offense and you have a big on me? Boom, I'm going to go. He comes off the DHO with Seth Curry and Royce O'Neal's on him, and Royce O'Neal's dropping, hey, take the shot. Doesn't matter. Simmons still drives and gets into the lane and gets a layup. You put a guy like Bohan Bogdanovic on him, and he took him into the post. Like, and these were all stuff that were in either early offense or half court settings. And I didn't even show the clips of him dropping dimes and stuff, because that's what he does, right? Is he creates threes for everybody. And I think that's an important aspect to it. But I think you can't do a lot of that with Embiid on the court. And I think that's the thing where I think that stuff. And I think that's the offense you build around him. He isn't Giannis. He isn't going to score an average 30. Like, he's not physically imposing as Giannis. But he's a better ball handler than Giannis. And he's a better passer than Giannis. And all he's got to do is just draw in guys and kick the threes. And he'll do that. And if teams won't help off those guys, he will attack and finish at the rim. You got to hope he will, at least.
I will say, this is a funny conversation to have about a team that has really been pretty good, right? Like the Sixers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? The Sixers have been pretty good. And I've been arguing all summer, I'd love to see them run it back and see what happens, because I will stand by this. I think if Danny Green doesn't go down, we've got a different Eastern Conference to talk about right now, because I do think that the Sixers had a shot at making a run to the finals, but they didn't have the depth to be able to make up for losing Danny Green. And then it doesn't help you that Embiid was hurt and Simmons just completely shits the bed the way he does, right? But that's over. Time to move on. The Sixers have to move on. And I guess, Derek, the question is, are they going to have to take a step back here to actually move forward?
So, like, are we talking about in the regular season? Are we talking about in the trade?
Overall, franchise trajectory, is it going to have to take a step back? Maybe they're not in that conference finals contender picture, which right now they aren't without Simmons. No. You know, you don't know what they're replacing him with. But does it feel like they're for sure taking a step back? Maybe they're out of that top four.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think if you're going to start the season off without Ben, that's what I expect to happen. I don't think they're going to play. You're putting a lot on Joel Embiid. If Joel Embiid's out for even a 2 or 3 week stretch, they're going to really struggle to stay competitive. So I think you're probably talking without Simmons. I think you're still talking playoff team, but certainly I think you're talking 5, 6 seeds somewhere in that range, especially with the Eastern Conference. You know, there's a lot of teams that got better from Miami. I think Boston's going to be better. I think this is going to be a strong Eastern Conference. So yeah, I don't expect them to be challenging for a top 3 seed without Simmons. In terms of a franchise as a whole, though, it's so tough to say because who knows what's going to happen here at the trade deadline or between December and the trade deadline, whenever that trade would happen. Does a team get desperate? Does another star ask out? You know, the Sixers right now are in a pretty good spot in terms of young players they can trade, draft picks they can trade. Most contenders don't have. I think the Sixers owe one draft pick as part of the Al Horford trade. Other than that, they have all of their picks. They have a couple of young guys in Maxey and Thybul, even Shake Milton, who's on a cheap contract, who would be positive assets in trades. So it's hard to say when we have no idea what's going to happen in the trade market. But I think the logical outcome is, yeah, they're probably going to take a step back here. Unless Maxey just comes out and he's, you know, got a huge sophomore season ahead of him, I think they're probably going to take a pretty significant step back here as a true contender with the hope that you can eventually find yourself in the right spot to land that co-star that, quite frankly, Embiid's been looking for now for a couple of years. They just have not had a perimeter creator outside of Jimmy Butler. You know, and when you talk about you know, Simmons and Kenny B, you know, a big part of what they've lost, I think, is not, you know, and whether or not, going back to whether or not they really built their team around Simmons, one of the concessions I think they did make, they just did not pursue these high-level perimeter shot creators because Ben was going to have the ball in his hands. And I think that's really left them a little bit behind the eight ball now if Ben does leave, because they just don't, outside of Maxey, they don't have any real viability creating off the dribble from the perimeter. So, yeah, I think they're probably going to take a step back.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
Well, Mo, I guess let me ask you, outside of a high-level perimeter creator, is there anything else that would be on your your Sixers wish list to try to maximize Joel Embiid and his impact? And, you know, I mean, you're going to lose Simmons. That's over. So now how do you replace him? How do you replace the production? And maybe how do you make this team better even?
I mean, to be honest, I don't know if there is anything else they can ask for but a high-level playmaker, right? Like, I think that's the most important thing they're looking to kind of bring in.
What if it's not available, though? Like, should they – like, I what mean, could they get – is it two or three guys that are, you know, okay, you're adding depth pieces? That's not enough. I mean, it's not going to push you over the top. I mean,
unless you're thinking, like, here's the other problem and the other component to it. There are no free agents, right? It's not like you're saying, okay, let's look at next season, at least next offseason. We can get these three pieces and then sign this guy. So, you know, the only thing I'd say would kind of just being Daryl Morey is, like, if he is taking those pieces, he has another trade in his pocket somewhere else. Like, he has another plan coming through with either including some of those guys or keeping some of those guys and sending somebody else out and moving those things around. But, you know, it's going to be all about a high-level playmaker. And that's why, honestly, I don't think they should even rush the trade. On even December 15th, it literally, like, uncomfortable or not, even if you're losing games, it sucks and all of that stuff. You know, it's almost just like, look, we got to wait this thing out. Like, let's see how this goes. I mean, you have till the trade deadline, you know? And I don't think Simmons is sitting out a full year.
I agree.
So I just can't see that happening. It would be shocking. And that's a whole other podcast if that happens. But I think you're just in a position, you got to kind of wait until that happens. It goes just back to what I said in the very beginning. Let the season begin. Let's get 20 games in and see where teams are at.
You feel any sort of extra rush because you've got a 28-year-old MVP candidate? I mean, this is I'm assuming – at least the early prime of Embiid's career. You know, I mean, we've seen him do better as far as his physical conditioning. This is poised to be the time where he should be winning MVP awards, potentially pushing his team to the finals. I mean, does this kind of, obviously it makes it a little bit more stressful situation for them, but do you think that that's going to inform how they make this trade, or is it going to be much more long-term stability? Like, we need 3 or 4 years of being pretty good to give ourselves a chance, or do we want to try to just take a big swing?
I think a lot of that is going to come down to Joel Embiid himself. You know, if Joel Embiid puts pressure on Daryl Morey, I think Daryl Morey is very superstar focused. He's not going to want to piss off the one thing that is really making his franchise relevant. And I think he's shown that throughout his career, especially in Houston with Harden, at times to his detriment with the Russell Westbrook trade. You know, but I think if there's not sort of like a pressure from Joel Embiid to get him help now, you know, I think Daryl Morey's going to look at it and say, okay, well, what's going to increase our chance in the next, like, he looks at everything in like a 3-year window. So I don't think he's necessarily going to worry about winning games in October, November, and December, you know, but he is going to be worried about making the best trade that can help him in April, May, and June, and certainly over the next 3 years. So I don't think he's going to do anything right now. Like, in no world do I think he's sitting here saying, well, gosh, we really want to be a top 2 seed, and I can't do that if I keep Simmons now, so let's just get what we can for him. But I think if he feels like he can get a really good package or a significantly better package that'll help him over the next 3 years by waiting until the trade deadline, he's not going to worry about the short-term wins as long as Joel Embiid is okay with that.
I see the tail creeping up.
We got some cat action. well, I guess go ahead, Mo.
I wanted to just kind of answer just on that. You know, it's the other important aspect too is and you kind of saw it in Embiid's face today in the video of him with the press conference, of just like, that's the one thing that could change the timeline.
Yep.
Is if Embiid really gets frustrated to the point where he goes into Daryl's office going, yo, I'm tired. Trade the dude. Trade him now. I'm out. Type of deal. And I think, you know, that's the one thing I think that could change the timeline. I don't know if Embiid would do that, because I feel like Embiid would kind of, or at least Daryl would be able to talk to him about, like, this is what's going on. But that's the thing to watch for in the urgency. If the urgency were to change all of a sudden, is Embiid's demeanor. Because that was one of the more important things I took away from the video, was just Embiid looked very tired.
He did.
And this is day
three
two
or whatever. Yeah.
Of answering these questions, day three, like, you know, like, so it'll be very interesting to see how that kind of affects the timeline.
That's a good point, Mo. And there's already an escalation there. So it's a distraction. I mean, it was a distraction day one, but you can see that now that the camps are kind of going back and forth, it's going to be worse. And this is where, you know, I guess we'll see what Doc Rivers can do as a coach and bring in the locker room together. Any closing thoughts as we're like staring down the barrel of preseason? I mean, it's like 4 days, 3 days away. And by the time we record again, there's going to be preseason games. I can't believe we're here. But Derek, you're the guest. I'll let you go first, even though Mo's got his hand.
I'm going to Derek. Oh, okay. That's all.
All right.
I'm going all to right. Derek. That's why I was like waving like a airplane guy.
He's out here directing traffic.
I got my question for you, Derek, because you have to focus everything on the Sixers. What are you most interested or excited about outside of Philadelphia? What that you're looking at, like, this is what I really want to see. This I'm excited to check out this storyline or whatever, not Philadelphia Sixers related.
That's a really good question. I have been so focused on a point guard who refuses to shoot that I truthfully haven't thought too much about the actual NBA season in quite a while. I mean, look, the Nets played 9 games together. I'm interested to see how they all play together. That trio is fascinating, I think, to everyone. I'm interested to see how Klay comes back and whether or not they can look like they used to. And I'm always interested in young players. Like, I can't wait to watch Cade. I can't wait to watch young players progress throughout their career. In all honesty, that right there, the progression of young players throughout the career, that's probably always my number one answer, almost regardless of the season. I sort of had my background. I initially started writing about the NBA by covering the NBA draft through Draft Express. So that kind of progression and watching those players is, I think, probably always my answer if I'm focusing league-wide.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Mo, see, Dave, I asked
that was a good question. That was a very
then.
Good question.
Every now and then I come up
I like
with
it.
One. But you,
I know.
To be fair,
I like
I'm
going
to spend the next 6 days of my life talking about nothing other than a point guard who refuses to do the most simple and basic task in basketball. So
you think just six
you
days?
Should, yeah.
You think just six
you know,
days? I don't think a trade's coming till near deadline, homie. You're talking about Simmons.
I'm just hoping that maybe a basketball game will give me something else to talk about.
I will say this.
Sure.
I will say this. Doc Rivers should have a pretty interesting perspective because remember, Rondo like stopped shooting for a while. Very, very similarly. Well, I guess, Mo, any closing thoughts this week? I mean, again, this is like the last show before preseason. So this is the last time nobody's listening.
I'll do my mini rant I'll relive the mini rant I gave you guys just before we started recording. But we just got a tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski saying the NBA is closer to 95% vaccination. I think we spent so much time focused on Kyrie Irving talking, Andrew Wiggins, Bradley Beal. We kind of just lost sight of like, yo, the training camp's coming. Guys are going to get vaccinated during that time. You know, I think we're going to be a lot closer to 100% even than the 95. I won't be surprised if we're in like the 98 range by the time the NBA season actually begins. So I think everybody just needs to chill a little bit on all the NBA, this whole anti-vaxxer problem in the NBA and things like that. Let's just see where we're at on October 19th and where the numbers are in terms of that. Because I think we're going to be a lot closer than where we were. And by the way, 90%, it's still an A. It's good.
Well,
yeah, I mean, my only concern there is you've got a couple of very high profile players, which first of all is going to, like, if that impacts standings at all, it, like, people talk about it no matter if it's one person or 10 people or whatever. And second of all, it's just the you know, they have a very big platform. The messages that they send, I think, are counterproductive and damaging. So it concerned me from that perspective, too. I do agree the overall 95% is a pretty good number. And it's certainly made a lot of progress here in the last couple of weeks. So I agree with you there. I also have to say, Moe's Tavern background is chef's kiss 100. It's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah. Moe kills us with these Zoom backgrounds. He actually got raided by some Zoom background rating account because they didn't realize it was a fake background. But, you know, Moe's a baller. And it's all because of Nerder She Wrote.
Derek, I had this fake house background with a piano in the background. I had all this stuff. It looked like a palatial estate in, like, the mountains of Colorado. And, like, literally for about 4 days, people were like, somebody sent it to Rate the Room Twitter account. They rated, said there wasn't enough green, like no plants or anything like that. And then it became like people just kept, and I'm laughing the whole time. I'm like, it was a stock photo. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. They tried to give him a Netflix special because, you know, he was so popular.
Oh, I would have taken that. Exactly. I would have taken.
All right. Well, everybody, look, go and follow if you.
Dave, what are you looking for? What about you?
Oh, nothing. Absolutely okay, nothing. Look, I'm ready.
Wait up.
It's a good thing we don't pay him for his basketball opinions.
Yeah. No. I'm a caretaker here. I will say this. The NBA put out some stuff talking about some of the competition committee rule changes, the points of emphasis. And I got a chance at Summer League to talk to a few people that are on the competition committee. And you know, it's nice to know that they actually do care that the game has kind of become gamified and bastardized to a certain degree. The league is actually trying to solve the broken parts of the game. And if they will stick with this, you know, calling offensive fouls when offensive players throw their bodies into, you know, helpless defenders who are in the air playing defense and they really clean this stuff up, it's going to make the game better. It's going to make it more watchable to me, a guy who is not a basketball purist. I don't want post-ups. I want good basketball, but I want it to be basketball. I don't want, like, if I wanted to cover the Globetrotters, if there was money in it, I actually would do it because it's funny, but there is no money in that, so I don't. But, you know, we've gone too far away from the point in an emphasis to just try to, let's see how we can break rules to get advantages. And I do think spirit of the game gets lost, and it's important, man. Like, you need it to relate to the average person and to the game that they played to a certain degree. Clearly, NBA players, they play basketball at a level that the average dude who's touched a basketball will never attain. But it should still look the same. And I'm sorry, but some of these fouls, like if you called them in a pickup game, you'd probably get into a fist fight. And that's how we ought to feel about the way these guys flail. So if I'm looking at anything, Mo, it's just that. But I, like everything else, trust but verify. I need to see it to believe it because I do not think that they will actually solve this problem. We'll give them a few months to try to fix it, but I don't think it's going anywhere. You guys agree with me here?
I think this is a good step in the right direction. It's my bigger thing is, will you continue to enforce it? So just you're along the lines. Is it going to be a thing we're going to do in October and November and forget by April?
Yep. Lip service does not pay the bills. So just, you know, show me what you got. Everybody go and follow Derek on the app so that you get a notification when new stuff drops. Him and Rich Hoffman are out there at training camp. You guys are alternating, going back and forth, correct, with the Daily Digest and sort of giving updates. You wrote about Shake Milton and how, hey, this might be a big season for him. So everybody go and check that out at The Athletic. Subscribe. Derek, what's the name of the pod again? Because I cannot remember right off the top of my head.
Sixers Beat.
There we go. Go and subscribe to the Sixers Beat podcast. Check that out. Him and Rich, again, do a great job there. Derek, thanks for coming on the show, man. We got to do this more often.
Well, I mean, luckily the Sixers won't be controversial come next week. They'll be a normal franchise. There will be no opportunity to have me on, but I appreciate very much you having me here. And thanks.
Yeah. Well, for Mo and for Derek, I'm Dave. Thank you guys for listening as always. And we'll be back next week, where we're going to have preseason to talk about.